Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Season 3, Episode 5 of The Umbrella Academy, Marigold, may be over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. I'm Marissa Garza, and following Harlan's instructions, I'm listening with my Marigold to try and find our co-host. I think I found her, Mary Kukowski? Mary, are you there?
I'm there. I mean, I would personally never follow Reginald Hargrave's instructions, but it's fine. Oh, Harlan's instructions.
Harlan's.
That's Harlan's different. Instructions. I mean, I wouldn't follow either of their instructions, personally. Harlan's instructions are a little bit out there, a little bit too in tune with his own feelings for me. And then
they're Harlan's.
And then Reggie's instructions generally just result in a lot of destruction and death. So
follow your own instructions, Mary. That's my, not that it was solicited in any way, but I would say follow your own song.
Okay.
Follow your own heart.
March to the beat of your own.
Yeah. Drum. One of those. Well, we have a lot to talk about in this episode. I was looking at things and there's a lot of moving pieces in this one. So before we jump in, I do just want to remind everyone you can find this podcast along with all of our other coverage in our own Posture Recaps feed at posturerecaps.com/umbrella-academy-feed or in the Everything is Super feed, which is /super or anything in the Binge Show Recaps, which is posturerecaps.com/binge. We are on, at the end of this podcast, we'll be halfway through our coverage of episode by episode recaps for The Umbrella Academy. So these will still be coming out through July of 2022. And then we will have a feedback show at the end as well. We'd love to hear from you along the way or in preparation for that feedback show. So you can reach out to us in the Post-Show Recaps Discord, directly to us on Twitter. We've got Frail Mary and Mars Bars you can reach out to, or you can email super@postshowrecaps.com. Those are all the logistics of all of the things for how to find us with your podcast Marigolds, I guess. And just as another reminder, these episodes will be spoiler filled. So we will be talking about this episode like we have watched the entire series, because we have watched the entire series so far. If you don't want to be spoiled, please do go finish the series and come back and join us. So Mary, episode 5, what are we thinking?
Well, if you were really, really excited to hear about Pogo, you get a little bit of that at least.
Yeah, there's some Pogo.
There's some Pogo. There's a lot more Klaus, so I'm always going to be on board for that. A little bit of romance, if you're into that kind of thing. And a little bit of kind of moving the ball toward the finish line here with the sort of a portal through the Buffalo Room. So we've got a lot of important things. I'd say this episode is starting to move, like we've kind of crested the bell curve and we're coming back towards like episodes that really matter.
Yeah, I think this episode is picking up the pace a little bit from the episodes that we had recapped prior where we were like, okay, you're moving things forward. But this one, we're really moving things into like, we're moving closer to the climax. I could feel it as well. So should we just get into it? see where we end up.
All right. Let's get into it.
Well, this episode starts with us getting a little bit of a peek at Pogo's backstory. So we start with a flashback into 1994, and I don't know if they were channeling Kill Bill or The Matrix or both, but those were the vibes I got out of this. Basically, there's like this martial arts room, or and also Cobra Kai, because I also love Cobra Kai. But there's this martial arts room, and Pogo is training the sparrows, and the object of this training session was basically the first person to ring the bell while fighting with the other person, and Ben and Jamie are matched up. What did you think of this fight?
Yeah, this is a lot more advanced for the young children than it was in the original timeline when they were just like running upstairs and things like that. Like when the Umbrella Academy was getting their young training, it felt like it wasn't quite this hands-on. But this is pretty interesting. We had talked a bit last time about whether or not this is like the same Pogo. How much has, you know, this timeline and this version of Reggie changed how Pogo is? And I think in some of these scenes, he seems a bit more like what we kind of came to expect from Pogo. It's really how everything ends up that really make everything a little bit more different with him. But he still seems to be someone who's kind of like training the kids, but and clearly feels some manner of protectiveness over them, more so than Reggie does.
Yeah, he's definitely, I think in this version of Pogo, he's protective, but like also not afraid of Reggie. And I think like original Pogo had some fear there. And I don't, you know, obviously it's probably because of the experimentations that were done and all of that stuff. And I don't know if that didn't happen in this timeline, but we get a fight between Ben and Jamie. It's a very big fight. Like, this big deal. We think that the fight's going to end when Ben is like tentacle squeezing Jamie, but Jamie is still hanging in there, and Pogo's like, hey, wait, this is too much. And Reggie stepped in and he says, no, Jamie will tell us when it's too much, which at that point I was like, okay, but also like she could die. Like,
I'm pretty sure that's not how like it works. Right? Like, it shouldn't be on the person who's being
in a training simulation.
Right. No. Like, destroyed here to be like, okay, I tap out. And plus, I don't think that if Jamie had said that, if Ben would have necessarily let her go.
No. Yeah. He was totally in like this weird place. I don't know where he was, but Jamie uses her resources and picks up a piece of wood that had come off of the wall before and stabs one of the of Ben's tentacles with this wood piece, and Ben like runs away. I thought it was interesting, another instance of Ben running away.
So much like Faye's birds, it seems like Ben's tentacles are also, if you hurt them, it hurts him as well.
Yes. Yeah. At the end of this fight, we do get a conversation between Reggie and Pogo, and we have some like foreshadowing. I didn't pick it up on the first watch, but Reggie says, I think it's time to send them to the other side. The other side of where? like the other side as in the other side of the hallway? What side are we on? The other side as in the afterlife? Where are we going? And Pogo's like totally against this. He thinks that this would be like suicide and doesn't want to send the sparrows that way.
Yeah. And obviously on a rewatch, we know that this other side is probably the other side of Hotel Oblivion.
Right. Right.
Or Hotel Obsidian into Hotel Oblivion.
Obsidian Oblivion. Yeah. Would make a great band name. Reggie, you know, says to Pogo, okay, fine. If you don't like this, you can leave. And Pogo's like, I could be out in a week. And Reggie's like, you could be out tomorrow or today. What about today? And this is where we see the scene of all of the sparrows are lined up in the hallway. They're very, very sad. Pogo's walking through and kind of like leaves a box of medication to give to Marcus. And that's where we find out where the medication comes from and kind of know that Pogo was behind the medication of Reggie.
Yeah, it seems like this Pogo is very much like not fully trusting of Reggie in the way that he was in the other timeline. It really kind of goes back and forth. So it seems like kind of up till this point, this Reggie, before he gets medicated, is very similar to the way that the Umbrella Academy described their relationship with their father. But for whatever reason, this time around, Pogo decides, actually, I don't want to be a party to this, and I don't want these children to live this way. Whereas in the previous timeline, maybe because Reggie was waiting for much later to try and send the kids to the other side. Like, it's unclear why that never happened.
If I had any, like, this is, again, me being all about the trauma. If I had any guess into it, if Pogo was more traumatized by Reggie in the Umbrella Academy timeline, he'd probably want to stick around for protection and be as close to them as possible, as opposed to...
Why did Reggie not want to send the children to the other side in the first timeline when they were so much older?
Yeah, I don't know. That part, like, when did this... Was there a Hotel Oblivion in the other timeline?
I think so, because I think the only way I can wrap my brain around it is I have to assume there's always a Hotel Oblivion. It always happened because we saw the flashback, or it's in a future episode, but when Reggie is going to create Hotel Oblivion, that's like way before he has any of the kids. And I think the idea, it always made sense that like, or it only makes sense if he always only wanted 7 kids because he needed 7 people to go into Hotel Oblivion. So I think either season 1 was created before this concept had been fully established, or if you really want to look at it a different way, maybe with the Umbrella Academy that he had in season 1, he knew that they needed more time and more training in order to all discover their powers. And when you have someone like Klaus who's kind of refusing to discover his powers and instead drugging himself in order to not do that, and then they all move out. So
I think that's the key. I think it's like the separation, because when you look at the end game of Hotel Oblivion, from what I remember, we'll see if my memory holds up on the rewatch, basically all they did was like, I mean, yeah, you needed like the energy, but they just stood on a symbol and like the energy came out of them. I don't know if like they needed to like build up their mana, for lack of, this is like video game terms, like Magic the Gathering terms, but like if they needed to build up their resources to a certain threshold to be able to get the energy that they needed out of that. But I have no idea why they couldn't just, like, Reggie couldn't just say to the Umbrella Academy, hey, we're going on a field trip, go through this hallway, step on these things, bada bing, bada boom. Like, I don't know what the development of the skills had to do with the timing of things. I do think the camaraderie and the we're going to trust each other is part of it, because it's like moving together as a unit into this unknown weird space.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. I think the answer kind of to all of this just has to be, in this timeline, everyone's a little different. Maybe his plan is a little more accelerated. Maybe he thinks that he found some more highly powered children, and that's kind of why he feels like maybe he can do this. Maybe he's getting more desperate. We don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we'll find out who in maybe probably 2 seasons from now. I don't know if we'll find out in the next one. So yeah, that's the little slice of the backstory that we get into Pogo. We return back to the episode, and Five is at the biker bar with Pogo, and where we had left them at the last episode. And Five says, hey, I'm one of Reggie's children from another timeline. And Pogo's like perks up a little bit. He's like, okay. And he mentions that they met before in 1960s, and Pogo's like, well, if that was true, I'd be talking to a 60-year-old man. He doesn't necessarily believe it, but I think he kind of knows what's up. But this is where all the bikers come to protect Pogo as he takes off and goes to his trailer.
Yeah. this is interesting, because I kind of feel like Pogo should just hop on board with like whatever. It's like you grew up, or you know, you spent the last several years with a bunch of superpowered, you know, kids. You live in a universe where their posters are just like plastered around the city. Someone else showing up and being like, yeah, I'm one of those kids, but from the past and from the future at the same time. That checks out. I don't understand why Five feels the need to get a tattoo. Like the tattoo, he says, the loop, but like you're already in Paradox City. I don't know.
I think it's so when Five visits Pogo at the trailer, meets Sammy,
yeah,
who you know apparently is Pogo's girlfriend, mm-hmm. and explains that he got this tattoo from Pogo in the future, again with the skin. I didn't need to see it, flip flopping around.
How do we even know 100% that is? Like that tattoo was given by Pogo in the future. I mean, isn't it only given by Pogo in the future because he's doing it by Pogo right now?
I don't know. This is where
we've already gone through this. This is where I think the clones might come into play.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I do think like here is where Pogo says, "So it happened." What happened? What happened?
I guess.
Someone went through the hallway, but Lila and Diego, I guess, had opened the door at this point, but hasn't really I don't know what so it happened, but he definitely knows that something's like going on.
I think, yeah, it's so it happened. So I guess Reggie is able to go to Hotel Oblivion. Like, I think that's maybe the implication here.
Yeah, that could be. He shares a book with Five of symbols and sigils, which totally like throws Five for a loop because he's like, "Your dad believed in science and facts. You know, the Fibonacci sequence can be put into like spirals and stuff. So science and art are very well together, Five. Don't dismiss them." And this is where Pogo kind of explains, "Hey, we were preparing the sparrows. If the sparrows didn't come back." Back for like Five doesn't know, we don't know on first watch, we know now. And he says Project Oblivion is starting again. Does that mean like it was abandoned or it was failed and it re-came through? Like that's what I was trying to figure
maybe
out.
Maybe like the it's starting again, meaning that Reggie was starting it before he was being medicated, and now that he's been taken off the medication, he's starting it again.
That could make sense. Yeah, that makes more sense than it was failed and then was restarted. But this is where I didn't know if any of that would help answer the question that you asked at the beginning of this conversation, which was why did Five choose to get the tattoo? Because he says, all right, I better get this tattoo to close the loop. And I don't know if that's because of like Back to the Future time travel logic of like, we have to do the thing, otherwise the thing won't exist. Like, I don't know. Talking through this did not clarify this for me, is kind of where I'm going.
That's kind of how this whole show is. Sorry for everyone listening to this podcast, and this doesn't help break it down at all. But it's still, I think that's like kind of the point when it comes to like time travel content, is like half the fun is just talking about it, even if you don't fully understand it.
Yeah, and just like letting your mind expand. So basically, to wrap up the Pogo and Five stuff, Five meets Pogo, gets the tattoo, learns about Project Oblivion, gets the book with the symbols and everything. And that's pretty much all we see from the two of them this episode. Anything we left out?
Not so much. I don't know. In general, the whole Pogo thing, the Pogo being alive in this timeline, did you feel like that was necessary? Was it worth it? Was it interesting?
I think I liked seeing this version of Pogo. This is kind of the version of Pogo that I kind of wish was around in the first timeline of like of challenging Reggie. Reggie really didn't have any challenge until all of the everyone left and split, and his power was kind of like split in that way. So I enjoyed seeing that part of it, but I don't know if he added much. The same conclusion could have come from Five just finding the book and learning about stuff. I don't know if we needed to learn it from Pogo.
Yeah, I think it was kind of more just like a
It's like fan service-y.
People,
like,
yeah. Although, I guess it does help. Like, I almost feel like I wish Allison was here during this conversation because it might show her, like, yes, Claire is not alive in this timeline, but other people are, and maybe other time, like, I don't know. Even though Five keeps saying, like, we need to stay here, like, deal with it. This is our time. Y'all could find somehow, maybe I would not completely give up hope that you might be able to time travel again. And if you do, maybe Claire will be alive somehow because Pogo has been.
Right. Exactly. Good point. Well, another pair that we follow, there's lots of duos and pairs yes. in this episode. Another pair that we follow throughout this episode is Luther and Sloan. So last we saw Luther, he had come over to the Sparrow Academy after his interaction, is what I'm going to call it in this episode, with Allison. And he kind of, you know, Sloan's bringing him food and he's loving it and he's stress eating and all of this stuff. And he says he can't go back because he was fighting with the siblings. I found it really interesting that in, you know, talking to Sloan, he doesn't mention anything like, hey, I'm kind of like really bothered by what just happened to me with my sister or anything along those lines. The only sign I could see that he was stressed out or traumatized was the stress eating. Like, I didn't see any residual things from that interaction come into this episode. And that was kind of rough.
Obviously, this is not okay in the real world, but I think potentially the implication the show is supposed to be saying is like, because he previously had interest in Allison, that it wasn't like, I don't know, they've had this sort of will they, won't they for so long that maybe he wasn't feeling as bad about it, like maybe feeling not like he wanted it, obviously. I mean, he was actively saying no, like, so that's why I'm trying to toe this line, because I think this is like not something that should be how it works in the real world. But I'm wondering if the idea was more like he knew that she was upset and was choosing to like not think about it and not hold it against her. I wish I could say that we have other episodes after this where he explains a little bit more about this, but I think the solution that he's been doing is basically just like, nope, I'm all in on Sloan, push it down, you know?
Almost
in the same way that someone who's like in a committed relationship, but then in a movie or in a play can kiss someone and like not be fazed by it because they're like, well, it was fake. Like, maybe that's sort of what he was thinking about it. But I feel like he should be a little more.
Even if it wasn't like, hey, this, like, explicitly come out and say, like, what happened? Like, being off a little, I would imagine after something like that, I would be a little off. And the only sign that I saw that he was a little off was stress eating. And that's, like, the only thing.
That is what he did a lot of season two, though. So I think that might just be his go-to. You know, maybe he just really wants to be with Sloan and doesn't want to spend his time with her thinking about Allison and, you know, rehashing that. I don't know.
Yeah, it just kind of seemed like I was really, like, really watching with a microscope on the rewatch to see if anything, but it definitely, like, was breezed over, in my opinion.
I agree.
He also is just talking about, like, reflecting on his relationships with the siblings and saying, the only thing we have in common is childhood trauma, and I don't know if that's enough anymore.
Well, and I think that, you know, we just talked at length about, like, him not directly bringing up Allison. I think this is part of it. I think that he's realizing that maybe relationships he thought he had are different and not as strong as he thought. He thought that maybe they had more general respect for each other, and now he's kind of thinking that might not be the case.
Yeah, and to me, this is a welcome to being an adult, Luther. It's just like all of the friends that, like, you're friends with in school because of a school condition. Or for me, I had a moment where I had friends that I people pleased around, and then I realized I was people pleasing, and then they're not like as good of friends anymore, or something like this. It was just a very relatable statement from, surprisingly, Luther. I was like, oh, way to go.
I don't know. I'm still fine. He's still not my favorite.
Oh, he's not my favorite, but I think his conversations about trauma are interesting.
Yeah.
During this whole interaction, Faye comes in and says, Ben wants to talk. And Sloane's like, oh, yeah, I'll be right down. She's like, no, not with you, with him. and Luther was hiding behind the door. I thought it was really funny because Sloane thought that nobody knew that Luther was there. And Faye's yeah. like, yeah, we yeah. share a wall. I totally know that he's here.
I always think that's funny. It reminds me of just like there's so many times where people think that they're being quieter than they are. And it's like, not, y'all not fooling anybody.
Well, and it's such a like sibling, like big house type of thing that would happen. Like you can't mm-hmm. hide. You can't hide as much. When Ben goes down, Ben's like trying to figure out Luther's like, what's your game? Yahtzee. I also like Yahtzee. It's funny. And this is where they start talking about old Ben, and Luther thinks that old Ben is still in there. And he also mentions, you know, he's like, ever since the Jennifer incident, and this kind of catches this Ben in his tracks, and then Luther kind of goes past it. So again, we have an opportunity. We have a little breadcrumb of the Jennifer incident, but we don't learn anything more about it.
No, except for the fact that it seems like it happened in both timelines or something right. in regards to Jennifer did. Right. But that's really all we find out.
Who's this Jennifer lady?
I don't know. I want to know.
And this is where Ben offers Luther a spot in the Umbrella or the Sparrow Academy because Grace brings out a box. She's like missing her eye. And Luther's like, are you okay? She's like, yeah, why wouldn't I be? here's your uniform. Welcome to the Sparrow Academy.
I was just thinking ahead. about the Jennifer thing. Do you think that it's possible that it might be like someone that Ben loved that he accidentally murdered or didn't
oh,
say
I'm sure.
or
yeah.
something like that? I was gonna say, oh, I yeah. feel like that's kind of the only thing that would really make sense.
But I don't know. It's interesting because Jennifer seems to be the only outside of Academy name that's like ever. It's not like Diego's like, yeah, and my friend Tim. or, you know, like, so how did Jennifer get to be so close with the
Umbrella Academy? I don't know. I mean, we had Patch. Maybe it was just because they were younger. Like, it seemed like once Ben died, that was kind of the thing that tore the Umbrella Academy apart. So maybe right. they were closer and had more outside friends and things.
But I just don't imagine Reggie letting some outsider get too close to the fam.
True.
So I think it'd be interesting to see that story come out. If you're listening, if you need ideas for season 4, let us know. During this whole like welcome to the Sparrow Academy thing, Faye is not like on board. She's like, what is that about? And Ben, again, I don't understand him. It's just like, wouldn't you like to know? Okay.
Like, I think
he thinks he's being meaner than he is.
He's like trying to be tough, but I think he's also part of him wants to be the Ben that the Umbrella Academy is always talking about finally. And oh, I think, sure. I mean, this is going to be a trend we're going to see over the next several episodes. Ben just really, I think, wants to have like a close family. And I think he thought that the way to do that was to be like in charge or to be sort of ruthless and mean, but that's really not the way to make it happen.
Yeah. And he's always being compared to something or someone. So it can be hard to know who you are in those situations.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. Anything else about Luther and Sloane?
No. I mean, good for them. I don't know. The Luther and Sloane stuff. I think the other thing that I'm kind of sad about is like Sloane's fine. I got nothing against Sloane. But like she was probably the member with the exception of Marcus purely because of his abilities that were kind of we already have that in Luther. Sloane was probably the one I was least interested in out of all of them and she's the one we get the most of. So I guess I just wish that she had some of the abilities or personality of someone else, but then Luther probably wouldn't, you know, wouldn't be into her. So I don't know. She's fine.
Little lackluster situation here. Well, but
don't you want, wouldn't you have wished you could have dated like Jane Or Jamie. Sorry. Jamie. I feel like Jamie has the more interesting, fiery personality.
She does. She does. Yeah, but I don't see Luther going for that. I think you're spot on that
part. I feel like in a different universe where there was no Lila, that would have been like Diego's
Jamie. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, well.
For sure. Well, moving on to another dynamic duo, we've got Klaus and Reggie. Klaus visits Reggie again, who again is watching TJ Hooker. And I have to say, one of my favorite, I just love when there's something about old people watching TV. I just love it. I just love it. And he's like, you could do it, TJ. Cheering him on. Love it. And Klaus basically comes in and is like, hey, can you help me out here? And Reggie's like, why do you want to talk to me? And he says, you're so much nicer than the other one. He's like, yeah, I understand you're not the same. Yeah, I understand all this, you know, whatever, but I still need like a dad type figure to kind of help understand who I am.
Well, especially since this is just after he's come back from the dead, where his mom was like, the thing you're looking for has been right in front of you the whole time. And I think he took that to mean Reggie. So I guess he feels like there's also some like fate reason why he needs to hang with Reggie.
Yeah. And he, you know, he brings up some of the stuff he saw when he was dead, I guess. He says, you know, why did you lock me up? I need to understand why you locked me up in a mausoleum and slowed my heart rate.
But he's asking a person who didn't do this. Like, that's so funny.
But yeah, he's like, I just need to understand why you, not you, did these things. And he, you know, is very vulnerable in the fact by saying he's like, I'm tired of screwing things up. Like, he really, it sounds like, wants to really know how to utilize his own abilities for good. And Klaus is basically lies on the couch while Reggie acts as like psychiatrist in the situation and explains what it's like to be dead to Reggie. And he's like, it's like a dream / perfume commercial, which is a very apt comparison to what we saw. I thought it was great. And Reggie at the end agrees to help Klaus. He starts by giving him a hug and slapping some electrodes on his back and electrocuting him for an experimentation. And at that point, Klaus, of course, passes out. And we get a fascinating from Reggie at the end of that.
So do we like the fact that he is helping Klaus discover his powers by murdering him?
Well, I mean, that is his power, right? Like, his power is coming back. I don't know if this Reggie, I guess this Reggie kind of understands that now after Klaus has like told him everything. But it, you know, it did make me a little nervous on the first watch, but now knowing that it kind of works out, I was like, okay.
I didn't think so, just because I feel like if Klaus was going to die, and this kind of sticks with me throughout most of the season, if Klaus was going to die, he would have died when he was stabbed by the Wailing Sphere. So I just figured he would come back again.
That's fair. What are your thoughts on Reggie helping Klaus?
I think that with the perspective of having seen the whole season, it's very clearly for his own gain. I feel bad for Klaus because his journey is like, let me try to right my bad relationship with my father with this other version of my father who might be nicer. And it turns out, yes, he's more smiley and like friendly to your face, but he still has the same like manipulative instincts and selfishness. So,
yeah, there was an interesting conversation that I forgot to mention in the Luther part of the podcast, but Ben mentions nature versus nurture. And I think, you know, that's something to think about as you look at this entire season, because if you look at the Umbrella Academy versus the Sparrow Academy, it can be very much labeled as nature versus nurture because one got nurtured and one did not.
But were they nurtured? Like,
they were like groomed.
Yeah, more. I guess. But it's also confusing because it seems like they were this like robotic team who, at least in the beginning of the season, had some respect for their father. Like, they're still, why else would they still be staying at home doing the things they need to do? I mean, they're working like a corporation, but whose idea was that? Unless it was their idea to be like a corporation, Why have they not left after they have the ability to drug their father and everything? I don't know.
They need the money.
I guess. But like, to what end? Like, what are they doing? You know?
That's fair.
I guess they're being professional superheroes. Like, I don't really know.
I mean, I think that's what they are doing. That's what I took away from it, at least, with all of the billboards and the waving, the Marcus waving to the people.
I almost feel like they might be more like just celebrities. Like, I could see them being like on, I don't know, ads and commercials and stuff. But I just wonder how much they're actually like saving the day. Because they just seem to be sort of sitting around. I don't know. Like, is Reggie sending them on missions still?
Oh, I don't know. Was that a thing that Marcus did?
Maybe.
That we didn't get to see?
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't get to see much of Marcus, so it's possible.
That's true. Good questions. Well, anything else on Reggie and Klaus?
Not in this episode, but we're leading up to a lot more for the next one.
Picking up the pace. One of my favorite episodes is the next one. All right. Talking about, we had two more duos to go through in this episode, but both have major plot things happen to them. So Lila and Diego continue looking for Stan, because remember, Stan has disappeared. we don't know where Stan is. And so we're looking, what if he got Googled? You know, Lila's like, what if he got Googled? And this wakes Diego up. He's like, oh yeah, you better take this seriously. And this is where we find the hallway behind the Pachinko machine. And they end up going through it and get to the other end, which on first watch I called the Bizarro Hotel.
Yeah.
It was like just a little bit different. You know, they end up in the White Buffalo suite on that end, but instead of seeing the head of the White Buffalo, they see the butt of the White Buffalo. The pictures are all just a little bit different, and they make their way to the lobby and there's a bell that says do not ring. What were your thoughts of the first time you saw Hotel Oblivion from this
perspective? Yeah, the first time I saw it, I thought it was going to be a very like upside down world, kind of not like the Stranger Things, but I mean like opposite world kind of thing, where there was maybe going to be like, I thought they were going to actually go outside the hotel and see something interesting and different. Mm. And I thought maybe this was going to be like the solution to the Kugel end of world, was like maybe the Kugel can't reach this. And so like they go through there and then they just go out into like yet another alternate universe. That's kind of what I thought this was going to be. But it ended up not really being that. It ended up being something a bit different. And I think once we figure out the explanation of what it ends up being, I'm confused as to why there is a note that says do not ring the bell. Like, yeah. Who put that there? I don't know.
Yeah, agreed. Because I think, well, we know, having watched the entire series, that like this hotel is guarded by guardians, but they don't seem to have any like rhyme or reason to appearing in the first. Like, this is the only one that has like a signal to my recollection.
Yeah, that's kind of what it seems like.
Yeah. So throughout their stay at the Bizarro Hotel / Hotel Oblivion, Lila says to Diego, oh man, if we don't find Stan, Trudy's going to be so mad. And he's like, who's Trudy? And this is where Lila confesses that Stan is not her child, not Diego's child, and kind of sends Diego on a little bit of a trip. He's like, he tries to justify things. He's like, it's okay. You know, like, Stan's adopted. I was adopted. I can do this. Like, it's cool. And then he's like, wait a minute. You basically kidnapped this kid? Like, what is going on here? And Lila's like, that's okay. Stan's in on it. Which, like, throws Diego for a big, big loop. And we can tell because Diego's speech impediment or stutter comes back and he's not really able to, like, express himself in the way that he has previously. And he throws things and he's like, I got this. I can handle this on my own. What did you think of this revelation by Lila?
I was actually kind of sad about it on the first watch. Like, I kind of was growing to love the Stan Diego relationship. And so I was kind of bummed to find out this wasn't actually the case. I think it's also sad in some way because of how much Stan clearly like wanted to be Diego's kid, you know? Like, I think Stan's really looking for that father figure. It's just a show about daddy issues, and Klaus and Stan are finding what they think is their new father, and then it doesn't work out great for either of them. But yeah, I feel like this was kind of sad. I think on the rewatch, it's also like kind of obvious that Lila might be sort of hinting around at this, because she's starting to feel like maybe she, you know, they lose Stan, and maybe she's feeling like she's not going to have the most maternal instinct or be the best at that. What did you think?
My whole thing with that was like, why are you eating sushi? Okay, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Like, if there's one thing, there's many things that Schitt's Creek taught me, but I will never forget the no raw fish conversation around a baby shower. And like, you don't have sushi when you're pregnant. Like, that's like a big, I mean, you're not supposed to. You do what you want with your own body, but that's like a thing that people adhere to most times.
Do you know, like, chemically, like, why that is?
There's a risk of higher mercury, and then also just like, because things aren't cooked through bacteria, you just don't know.
Gotcha.
Okay. But all, because like, also cold cuts are another thing that you don't, which are cooked cold meats, but
yeah.
Anywho, that was like misdirection, but she's all on the sushi. This is not the first time she's going to want sushi. When she gets there the next time, she wants more sushi.
Guess she's having a craving.
She loves it. But so that was like, I think, a little bit of misdirection. So if you were picking up on the like, hey, don't think I'm going to make a good mom, and then she's eating sushi, it's like, oh no, she's not pregnant. She's not going to be a mom. What's that about?
Well, I think the idea of like, why else would she be messing with Diego by telling him he has a child if she's not pregnant?
My whole thing is like, I thought she wanted to be pregnant. Like,
oh, okay.
She wasn't pregnant yet, but like, hey, can we have this conversation? Like, is this a thing we can do? Type of thing. But yes, I felt sad for Diego during this whole thing.
Yeah, me too. I think in a weird way, he was starting to get attached as well.
Yeah. At this point, Diego goes and rings the bell. He's like, well, fine. Because he goes outside. He tries to go outside to find Stan, and he realizes he cannot leave the hotel. Like, he goes out the revolving door and comes right back in. There's no way out. So the only way out, I guess, is through in his mind. So he goes ahead and rings the bell. This is where like everything gets really dark. There's lots of different lighting. Everything kind of goes a little bit off kilter. You hear like some big clanking of armor, you don't really see the guardian. We know now that it's a guardian, but you don't really see the guardian. You just see this big axe take off two of his fingers.
Yeah.
At the end of it.
Now, did you have any thoughts in terms of like the fact that he's losing fingers, that this is going to somehow, not be the real ending or something? You know, I think when you, that's like a pretty big thing for a show that kind of dabbles in being kind of light and funny to do, right? I mean, it kind of in the same way where it was like when they had had Allison lose her voice at the end of the first season. Mm. I wasn't sure whether or not that was going to be a forever thing, but I kind of assumed it wouldn't be, because otherwise she has no power, etc. Or actually, I think at the time I had assumed that she would develop some sort of different power that she could use without speaking, but. Anyway.
Yeah, I think like in this case, sorry, pinky and ring finger. I don't want to like diminish your value in my life, but I do think it's something that he could have learned to still be accurate with throwing around. It's not like, you know, like people say like your big toe, like you lose your big toe, you can't really like do much.
Yeah.
You lose your pinky toe, you're kind of okay type of thing. I think that's kind of what I took it as. Like, oh, well, he's got a new challenge now that he doesn't have two fingers on one hand. I didn't really think about if this is going to stick around or not. It was different in my mind than Allison's, because Allison was like, directly, I mean, not saying that Diego's isn't directly connected to his superpower because he throws things, but it was just different for me.
Yeah. I don't know. It was interesting. But I think also at this point, this is when I was in my swing of like powering through the episodes really quickly that I didn't have time to think about the consequences.
Yeah. Screaming and running back to the other side, they finally make it through the hallway and close the door. And you can hear like the guardian can make it through the hallway, but he cannot make it through the door. So they're safe for now. And when they arrive on the other side, stands there. He had just gone out for a Slurpee and a Slim Jim, you know, like as you do. And he's not there for long because there's another Kugel wave that takes him away.
Do you assume that he bought the Slurpee and the Slim Jim with the money that Diego gave him?
Yeah, the $8. Yeah.
Yeah, the $8. Yeah, that checks out. So goodbye, Stan.
This is one I'm like, not for long. Like, this is one where I was like, yeah, he's got to come back. But
yeah,
I don't know when.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so weird because there are things like Klaus getting electrocuted that I was like, it'll be fixed. And then things like Stan leaving that I'm like, oh, shoot. Because at this point, we had already Googled, you know, Marcus and didn't have him come back. So I really wasn't sure. Unless part of me was thinking the last like two episodes would just be full on everybody coming back.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if like Marcus is like some high executive in Reggie's corporation that like takes over the world or something like that. Or Stan. Yeah. Stan is like the inheritance, like he's gonna get all the inheritance from everything. Like if they made it through the portal, basically, and I've just been living it up in the place where we leave off at the end of the season.
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
Any last thoughts on our friends Diego and Lila?
No, obviously a big direction for them to move into the discovering of the world on the other side of the Buffalo Suite, obviously very important for the end game. The removal of Stan here, while sad and definitely too soon, and I think also not treated with the amount of sadness that it should be over the next few episodes, but it does sort of move the pieces out of the way for the rest of the show. Like how would they have handled, you know, the end when you get down to the last couple moments? You really only need there to be like seven people left, right? And so we have to kind of get rid of everybody else in order to get there.
Yeah, that's Reggie recognizes that himself. He's like, yep, not everybody's coming through. So yeah, and I thought it was an interesting way to kind of give us a peek at Hotel, like tell us about Project Oblivion, show us Hotel Oblivion, but not necessarily draw the two together quite yet. So right. I enjoyed the introduction to both in this episode. All right, it's time for the big showdown. It's time for the big to-do. Of course, we were talking about Harlan, Victor, and Allison's storyline in this episode, and it starts off... remember at the end of last episode, Victor and Allison had kind of snuck Harlan out because everyone really wanted to turn him into the sparrows. But Victor's like, no, we got to go take care of this. So Allison drives Harlan to a drive-in where he's listening to headphones. And I just have to say, if I haven't said already, big year for headphones, like big year on Stranger Things for headphones, big year on Umbrella Academy for headphones and Walkmans coming back. Watch, if you got one of those, I bet you they went up in value.
eBay. Okay, you say that, and yet I am so scared to upgrade my super old phone because I don't want to remove the headphone jack. So big phone industry starts adding that headphone jack in, it can only go so far.
Here's a way to do it if you're listening. Sell these Stranger Things or Umbrella Academy special edition phone. Where you have access to headphone jacks. It could work.
Thank you. Yeah, I would need that.
So we're at the drive-in. Harlan's listening to his tapes. And Allison is asking, you know, like, not in a curious, genuine way, but in a I'm angry at the world way, what are you listening to? And he explains that he's listening to her, like her vibration. And she says, you know, what do I sound like? And he says, wrong. And I thought that was interesting because what we learn throughout this entire conversation, like we're here again so that Victor can basically take Harlan's powers away. And one of the ways that Harlan explains how to do that is like teaches Victor how to listen with his Marigold, which is basically listening to the things you can't hear. So I think the way that this is working is that like Harlan's listening to his headphones and then trying to listen beyond the noise that's in his ears. So I think when he says, what are you listening to? He's actually listening to Allison, who's sitting in front of her's vibration, and says, this is wrong because it's not like what you usually sound like.
Right. Yeah. I thought it was sort of like a, your chakras are off kind of thing.
Yeah. Like you're out of tune a little bit. Yeah. Allison smokes now, so I don't know if they're making value judgments along the way, but her drinking and smoking has increased. Victor arrives in the car. Have we talked about the car and the driving?
We mentioned it briefly, but I can't remember if that was in – it was like in our second or so episode recap. Yeah, why are they driving cars that drive – like with the steering wheel on the wrong side?
I think it was like – this particular car.
I should say other side, not wrong side. Non-American side.
Yes. I think it was determined that it was like just Reggie's car. That is a...
Where did they get Reggie's car?
That I don't know. I don't know where they got Reggie's car from, but they're using it and they got the keys to it, or they're magically attuned to it. I have no idea. But Victor arrives and Allison's like wondering what the plan is. And Victor's like, hey, yeah, I'm going to learn how to take Harlan's powers away. What if that doesn't work? Again, she's feeling the pressure to kind of solve for the Kugelblitz situation and kind of tells Victor, you have until tomorrow. Siblings swear that this is going to happen. Like, don't mess this up, Tiny. Like, she's going to stand by, but she's not going to give Victor forever to take care of this.
Yeah. I don't really know why she's on a rush timeline anymore, but okay. I mean, I guess the whole end of the world thing.
Yeah, it was interesting. Then we see like the power transfer happen. It's basically like, it reminded me of like Pokemon or some sort of like Yu-Gi-Oh or something, where it's like you're standing and you're fighting and you're facing each other and there's bubbles of energy. Like it was, and it was orange and blue. So
yeah, I mean, look, the logistics of what exactly they're trying to do here, I don't really get it. Harlan, okay. I mean, sorry, yeah. Victor wants to take away Harlan's powers,
right?
So why is Harlan doing anything with his powers?
Because I think he has to generate, like he keeps saying like let in the vibration. So he has to like let out the vibration for it to be, I don't know, collected by Victor.
Okay.
I don't know. That's what I got for you. That's what I got. Sure. There's just lots of energy. There's lots of energy, and it forms a bubble. And at one point, Allison, like, I didn't know what she thought she could accomplish by like yelling outside of the bubble, but she tries to rumor Harlan to stop this because she thinks that it's hurting Victor. And Victor's like, no, listen, I can handle it. Don't interfere. But Allison, of course, interferes and steps inside the bubble. And this is where I think like her powers change, because she says, stop it. And there's an effect without her saying, I heard a rumor that you stopped it.
Yes. Although I was always kind of confused about why she had to say the I heard a rumor thing anyway. It seemed like I always kind of thought that that she didn't need to say the rumor thing, but she just did it sort of like as her way to kind of channel her powers. But not that it was necessary.
But yeah, well, we did see a little bit of this in a episode prior to this. I can't remember. I think it was in the bathroom where like we were questioning if her powers had like a different effect. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it was like the bubble or if it was her just getting, if she was being fueled by emotional energy and that was what was taking the effect here.
Yeah. Both are possible.
Yeah. This is where Harlan is explaining you have to listen with your Marigold to the things you can't hear. He explains that like bees can hear pollen because bees are positively charged and pollen is negatively charged. So they basically like listen for each other, and that's how they get attracted to each other. I don't know how bees work. I wish
this,
I knew.
This was news to me.
Hello, bees. I don't know. I don't know.
Listen with your marigold.
It could have been a different, like, it's just weird to say, but that's what he thought. At one point, all of this energy exchange brings them up into the sky, and the rest of the sky gets super dark. So I don't know if they're also like vacuuming energy into themselves. Ooh. I don't know how this is working, but it gets super dark and there's lots of energy swirling. And finally, the glowy stuff comes out of Harlan and goes back into Victor. And I have to say, in the COVID era that we're in, it was a little weird to watch. But at the end, it is successful. They fall out of the sky, and Allison is also pushed back by this energy, but then the sun comes back out. What did you think of this situation?
I mean, it reminded me a lot of like the whole like wands connecting in Harry Potter kind of thing. Like it was all that kind of thing. I hear what you're saying about like Yu-Gi-Oh kind of, it's, you know, similar power exchange fight thing. It was fine. I still don't really understand the purpose of this. Like, if the purpose was because Victor was like, I also want like to learn these new powers, but I think as we're going to see, it's not going to be super beneficial to have robbed Harlan of his abilities.
Agreed.
Pros and cons.
Afterwards, both Victor and Harlan are exhausted. Victor's resting inside of the drive-in concession stand diner area, but Harlan comes out to talk to Allison, and Harlan's like, you know, thanks for letting us do what we needed to do. And he's like, I know why you don't like me. Allison's like, why? I don't like that you have this like hold on my brother, but like what else is there to know? And Victor totally.
Wait, can I just pause real quick?
Yeah,
that's really rich from Allison, who's like,
oh yeah,
got a huge hold on, all, like Ray, Claire, all these things. Why are you like so against the people that Victor has chosen to be attached with, like from the past?
And I don't know, again, if this is like her realizing that she needs Victor's power because of her power, like not feeling that her power is powerful enough, like teaming up with Victor makes her more powerful type of thing.
I think it's more that she just feels like Victor is
hers.
One of the few people left she has, like that really cares about her. And so she kind of is feeling needy and not wanting his attention to be divided.
Yeah. But this is probably why she does not feel good about learning this information.
Harlan, why'd you say this?
Victor knew that Harlan killed everybody. Killed their moms. And
yeah, and again, it's not so much that he killed their moms, it's that killing of their moms created the paradox that created the Kugelblitz that also created the timeline where Claire doesn't exist.
Okay, but this is what I don't understand. Like Allison says, like, you obliterated my child. And I was like, but I don't, how did that happen?
I don't think that did happen. I think like the end of the world was created by the paradox of their moms dying up here. Actually, it's not even so much their moms dying. It's the fact that then they traveled to the future.
It's right? The ending, like the current ending of the world that we're in that we're talking about, right? Like,
but I don't think that Claire was going to have existed regardless of this. Claire wasn't going to exist because you didn't exist in the same way in this timeline.
Exactly.
Basically, so, you messed it up. Yes. It's not even the going back to the 60s that was really the problem. You could have gone back to the 60s and hid out or changed your name or whatever. It's the fact that you went back to the 60s and then talked to your dad and like became criminals and all of that. Like that's the problem.
Yeah, so this is called not taking responsibility for your actions, because I was just like, what are you talking about? Why are you blaming Harlan for this?
Think that it is technically Harlan's fault for killing their moms, but like that's really only a factor because they traveled into that future also.
Right. But I just it was a bit much with the obliteration there. That's what I was like.
Yeah. Well, what's going to be a bit much is what Allison does next.
But which is what? Yeah. She goes ahead and kills him.
I mean, I was kind of over Harlan, but I was less sad about this than I was about Stan's death. But like, this is not how you handle your frustration or your feelings or your depression. You don't
murder people. Yeah,
we do not condone murder on this podcast.
Correct. I was very surprised. I don't know. How do you, we don't condone murder, but I'm going to ask, how do you think she did it? Like, do you think she rumored him? Do you think?
No, I think this was a classic case of like, they also have their like sort of martial arts style of fighting and all of those abilities that we see a lot. I think it was probably more of that. I think Harlan, as a person without powers, if he now has his powers taken away, he's kind of a weak old man.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only does, well, and this is all while Victor's like napping. Not only does Allison kill Harlan, but then puts Harlan in the back of the car and drives him to the Sparrow Academy and kind of like turns him over to the Sparrow Academy to Ben and says like, this is done. But you do see like Reggie on the stoop, and Reggie gives a look to Allison, and Allison nods and they go in together. So I don't know if this is the beginning of the foreshadowing of their little teaming up. And
as I think it is. Yeah.
As she goes in, she passes Luther in the Sparrow uniform. So yeah,
I will have a lot more to say about the fallout of this in future episodes.
Fair enough. There is one
scene, I don't want to waste it all now.
There's one scene that happened during all of the energy battle that we didn't talk about yet, and that was Allison had a conversation with Ray while like on a playground. Mm-hmm. And learn, you know, I wrote in my original notes, I was like, can Allison see dead people now? Like, I don't know what's happening, but they basically talk about how the fact that like Ray in this timeline died 6 years ago at the age of 82. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I must have lived a good life. And I was like, not the life you deserve. I was like, okay. And he's just encouraging her, saying like, look, I'm going to live on in your memories and in your heart. Can you just like promise me that you'll do what it takes to survive this? And then he disappears. Did you have any big thoughts on this scene?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just a form of, or like, she's had a couple sort of dreams or visions of him. And I think it's supposed to be kind of like you need to connect back to your other version of yourself, right? Like, this is the version of her that's not wrong, as Harlan would say. And I think it's supposed to weirdly make us long for that character, which I do.
Yeah.
The character being other Allison.
Yeah, it would be nice to see her around. So, yeah. Oh, we also learned that the Umbrella Academy could not go to playgrounds because they were too juvenile. So, like, where does this Jennifer lady come in? Again, I don't know. I need to know.
I don't know. I think that's going to be season 4 stuff. It's got to be.
Any emblems or songs that you wanted to make note of in this episode?
Yes. So, the emblem is at the beginning, when after the scene where Pogo leaves working for Reggie, it's I can't tell if it's storming outside. Let me see if I can. I have to listen to it. It seems like, so Pogo walks out the door of the Sparrow Academy, and there's Sparrow emblems on the door. And as he walks out, oh no, it's that he slams the door so shut so hard that the like glass where the sparrow sort of is cracks, and it cracks in the shape of an umbrella around the sparrow. So that's the nice emblem.
Yeah.
I don't know about songs. You know what? I feel like in the time when I was watching it, I was like, yeah, the songs are hitting just as well as previous seasons, but there weren't as many this season that were really.
The only one I can remember is like during the Kill Bill Matrix fight at the beginning. But I did not know what song that was. But I was like, this makes sense. This song was like this type of song.
It is called Into My Soul. I can only tell you that because I'm literally looking at the scene right now. It says it's called Into My Soul by Gabin? G-A-B-I-N. So that's a pretty good one. Like Gabin. Fight scenes are usually pretty good. But the fight scene between, or I don't know, fight the magical transfer of power scene between Harlan and Victor was just sort of like the more score sounding music.
Yeah, very orchestral. Mm-hmm. Well, anything else on this one that we need to explore, chat, dig into?
I think there's more that sort of was planted here, but is going to grow more in the next couple episodes. There's more I want to talk about in terms of Luther's relationship with Sloane, which we'll get to. There's more I want to talk about in terms of Allison's anger at Harlan and Victor that I'll talk about later. So I think there's a lot like that was really built up here, but I do feel like this one felt like less of a filler episode, mostly because we had the scene with Diego and Lila in the other side of the hotel that like maybe at the time didn't feel super, super important, but there was a lot of like foreshadowing toward the end in this episode.
Yeah. It gave us like Hotel Oblivion and the pregnancy timeline.
Right.
Yes. All at the same time.
And like with all of the pogo stuff, it was sort of the cluing into this has been Reggie's game plan from the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, more to come from us. We will be continuing our coverage with episodes 7 through 10. You can find them in our aforementioned feed at the beginning of the podcast. We'd love to hear from you, though. So if you would like to send us feedback, you can do so by joining the Patreon Discord by going to patreon.com/postshowrecaps.
And speaking of which, shout out to Derek on Twitter, who gave a really, really nice shout out to the podcast and was asking other people to check it out if they are interested in the Umbrella Academy. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Yep. So you can follow Derek's lead and find us on Twitter by tweeting at us. I'm at MarsBars, M-A-R-Z, and Mary's at Frail Mary. Or you can, like I mentioned before, email super@postshowrecaps.com. Mary, is there anything that people need to know about what you're up to?
No, same old, same old. Find me on Kowski Cast, Cow with a K, and you can check me out on RHAP talking about Big Brother 24. Season's officially started.
Yeah, it's rocking and rolling, I guess. I don't know.
It's moving, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Stuff is happening. And you can find me here on Postshow Recaps. Other than that, we'll see you in the next one.
Bye.